Welcome to Too Real to Be True. I am Jeanette here with my bestie Pam, and we have a special guest with us tonight. And it happens to be Cinco de Mayo, so we are drinking margaritas to celebrate all that we celebrate on Cinco de Mayo, which is basically tequila. That's what I celebrate. So anyway, our topic is I've been around. That's open-ended. And we'll see where it goes.
So our guest today has been around. I mean, I can't speak to all of it, but I've heard some good stories. And Jeanette doesn't even know our guest. This is a surprise.
I know.
And she's actually coming to us live from a bar, which could that be any better? Probably not. So welcome to our friend, Sabra. Jeanette. Meet Sabra. Sabra, meet Jeanette.
Hello.
Hello, everybody. It's nice to meet you guys.
Nice to have you. So,
well, Pam, I already know you, so we're just meeting like in an audio version.
Exactly. We are familiar with each other, but we know each other. Sabra grew up with our friend Chrissy's sister, Carrie. So that is how I know her, and she moved to Texas last year, but prior to arriving in Texas, she's been around. So,
I got around.
She got around. She's not from Texas, and she's lived many other places, but she's going to tell us all about that. And then, because Jeanette hasn't met you, she's going to pelt you with a bunch of questions, which is opposite for you, because you're the one who's always asking the questions.
It's true. It's true.
So tell Jeanette a little, and all of our listeners, a little bit about yourself.
Well, listeners, basically the reason they're talking about me asking all the questions is because I'm a journalist, and I have spent most of my career asking questions, looking for answers, and traveling the world as much as possible. I've sort of lived in various places. I think you're going to ask me about them, so I won't, you know, sort of, I won't blow all the secrets early. As you said, Carrie corrupted me. I was a very innocent child until I met Carrie, and then she corrupted me in the third grade, and we became troublemakers together, and my sort of curiosity from there led to this career of journalism. It's a little bit of a lie, not about Carrie corrupting me, total facts, but my parents are journalists, and I never thought I'd be a journalist, but when you grow up with two parents that write for a living, you can't help but learn how to write well. I could do that. And then, I sort of followed in their footsteps and here I am.
So did you go to college East?
I did. I grew up in Virginia. My family's from Virginia, sort of like, they can trace it back. It's the most boring thing. I always wanted to be like from a family that was like Romanian princess, escaped some sort of war, had some castle somewhere. But basically they were like from England, got on a boat, came over in like the 17th century, parked in the Chesapeake Bay area, which is like where all the English people went. And then, you know, basically started like tilling the fields and doing all kinds of like, you know, whatever things, and stayed there. So my family's from the Chesapeake Bay area, both sides, mom and dad. I went to school there. I went to college in Vermont, went to the University of Vermont as an undergraduate. And from there, my wanderlust just sort of really took off. And I don't want to list everywhere I've lived, but I've gotten around, girls. I have gotten around.
I would like to already start with questions and revisit how Carrie corrupted you.
Carrie corrupted me because she basically could convince you to buy a rainbow unicorn at like an overpriced ticket. And I mean, she could convince you of anything. She is the master of... she is an incredible leader. I can't believe if she went into politics, it would be a fantastic thing. She's wicked smart. And she, I remember Carrie used to come over when we were kids, and my mom was a huge Scrabble player, and Carrie would like be able to play Scrabble with her, you know, like, you know, equally. And she was sort of a force, and we all sort of followed her lead. If she said we should, she could, I don't know how to do it, but basically she gets really mad when I tell the story about the time we got arrested, but it's one of the funniest stories ever. So basically we were in, summer after ninth grade. I had gone to boarding school. My parents sent me to boarding school because they were like, you're going to go off and go to boarding school and meet nice young women like yourself and from nice families, and you'll hang out with nice people. So I went to Richmond, went to boarding school, and meanwhile, which was the dumbest thing in the world. They sent us off from Fairfax County Schools in Virginia, which is some of the best public schools in the country. So Carrie was at Langley High School, which is one of the best public schools in the country. And I was over at St. Catherine's School for Girls in Richmond. I came home for that summer, and I had a couple of weeks before I was going to go off to Camp Allegheny for Girls in West Virginia, where I would spend 7 weeks out of summer because it was awesome. And we decided that Carrie lived in a development called King's Manor, and it was like townhomes in McLean, Virginia, which is a fairly posh kind of suburb of Washington, D.C. And I lived in a street not far from there. And Carrie, we knew that our neighbor, who we were friends with, he was our age, he was out of town. And his family was down at the beach. So they were like in Ocean City or Rehoboth Beach or something like that. But they had left in place a house sitter. And the thing is about the neighbor, who was this guy, kid named Chris, he had a go-kart. And we liked to get a hold of that go-kart and, you know, whiz it around the little neighborhood there. It was fun. Carrie more so than the rest of us. But we knew how to get into the house because, this is the 80s. Yeah, this is the early 80s, mid 80s. And we all knew where everyone's hidey key was, right? Remember that day when those days when your parents would give you a hidey key? So we knew where Chris left his hidey key. And we knew that the house sitter was there because we'd been spying on him. And we knew that there was beer in there. And we decided probably about at 10 o'clock on like a Monday or Tuesday morning that we would use the hide key to go into Chris's house and get the house sitter's beer and whatever else. I mean, we just felt like we could do that. So we took the hide key, walked into Chris's house, and found like a 6-pack or 12-pack of, I am sure it was like Bush Light or something horrible. and a huge bottle of, I forget what this liquor is called, but you've seen it. It's a tall, thin bottle of yellow, some kind of liqueur, some sort of like Italian liqueur, not limoncello, but something like that. And I was like, well, we should take that. And there was a bottle of vermouth. Carrie saw that. So my mom drinks vermouth. Mrs. Moore at the time, well, I mean, she's a famous martini drinker. So we took that. And then we were walking out and we saw on the sort of front living room on the coffee table, we saw this notebook, and we sort of looked at the notebook and flipped through it. We said, "Look, God, this is the diary of the house sitter." And so there was three of them. So it was me, Carrie, and this woman, Karen. I don't know what happened to Karen after our felony charges, but she basically, we were like, "Let's take the book, because there's some really good stuff in here. Let's just read it." So we took the notebook with us and the booze, and we went over next door to Carrie's house. And keep in mind, we're like 14, maybe 15. It's the summertime. Carrie's mom's at work. Our parents at work. You know, so we start drinking the beer, and we try the vermouth. Carrie's like, "My mom drinks this. This got to be all right." So we drink the vermouth, and that's pretty fucking horrible, right? And then, because who drinks straight vermouth? And we drink the lemon stuff, and that was probably all right. But we got through the beer. We probably had three beers each, and we're you know, we're kids, we're like 14 years, 15 years old, so we're drunk. And then we look into the notebook, and we get into the notebook. And girls, I got to tell you, this notebook was like a lesson in all kinds of coming of age stuff that nobody told me about. I mean, it was like full of like this house sitter. I don't know how old she was, and don't ask me what her name was because I don't remember. But there was like all this stuff about her and her boyfriend getting it on. And none of us have done that. I mean, I liked boys, but I didn't know what to do with them for any, you know, maybe I kissed one. I don't know if I liked it. I think I was probably just scared. And I mean, Carrie's married to a woman now, so I don't think she, but it was interesting as hell. Anyhow, the girl was like, I mean, she wrote about everything, about having sex with her boyfriend everywhere, including on the lawn of the community center, which we just were like, oh my God, we ride our bikes through there. And then, and then we turn the page, and there in the middle of the notebook is this Polaroid picture of her boyfriend, who we knew was her boyfriend because we've been spying on him for 2 years to scope out the joint. Not 2 years, sorry, 2 days. 2 days to scope out the joint. And he's like sitting in our friend Chris's living room, like on all fours, hands on his hips, naked, buck naked, with like a pup tent of he's got the biggest erection we've ever seen. I've never seen an erection, and I mean we were just flabbergasted. So then we decided to take that Polaroid picture, and we were going to get on our bicycles and ride up to the public library, which was like maybe a mile away, and ride up to the public library, and we were going to Xerox it and make copies of it and post it around the neighborhood with this picture of this naked dude that says, for a good time, call. And we were going to leave, like, I think we were going to leave Chris's mom's phone number. I can't remember. But we rode our bikes up. Now, keep in mind, we've had 3 beers, so we're drunk because we're 15. And we rode up to the public library, and it's a coin-operated Xerox machine. Remember those? So yeah. We're sticking in 5 cents, and we can't, like, get the copy to come out. I mean, it's all dark and stuff. We can't figure it out. And then the librarian's like, can we help you? And we're like, you can't help us. So we got our bike. That was a fail. So we aborted the operation. That didn't work out. And so at this point, it's probably, I don't know, late in the afternoon. And our parents are about to come home. So I got to go home and see my dad and have dinner and stuff like that. And we sort of like, you know, we closed up the afternoon pretty successful, stole some beer, read about some pornography, and saw a naked picture of a young man. And that was a pretty good day for a 15-year-old, right? In the summer of 1985. Anyhow. My dad, I phone rang at about 11 o'clock that night, and it was Carrie. And she said, Chris's mom has just called me, and she knows we've been in there, and she knows we took the beer, and she knows we took the notebook. And she says, if we have the notebook, that the house sitter says, if we give the notebook back, she won't do anything. She'll leave us alone. What should I do? And I said to Carrie, well, we should burn the notebook and deny the whole thing.
Oh, my God.
And that was, and Carrie was like, I don't know, I don't know, I don't know. I mean, so Carrie was the corrupter. She was the convincer. But when it came down to it, I guess I was kind of the mastermind denier.
Oh, my God.
Nonetheless, the next morning, the phone rings, and it's our friend Michelle Marple, who basically failed so many grades that she had her driver's license in the ninth grade. And she said, I'm coming to get you. The cops are at Carrie's house. And Mrs. Moore is there, and she is pissed. So I went over there, and the cops are there. And sure enough, we basically got arrested, but they called it something else because we were underage. And we got charged with breaking and entry. And had to do... we had to do community service, and it was on our records until we were 18, and then it was expunged.
Oh,
breaking and entering if you had the key.
So Karen, I don't know, maybe I corrupted her. We don't know, but basically that was a tie.
But how was it breaking and entering if you didn't have the key? I mean, if you had the key.
Because we broke in and we didn't have permission to be there, I guess. I don't know why. We went to juvie. We didn't go to juvie court.
Where all the parents were in cahoots together to teach you a lesson.
Yes. And here's the story. I mean, the guys, I don't want to say his name here. He's a nice guy. But I'm not going to lie to you. His sisters were older and they were kind of slutty. I mean, how do I know they were slutty? Because one of them slept with my brother. And anyone who would anyone would sleep with him.
Oh, my God. I love it. Well, your brother can't speak for himself. So
no, he can't. He'll never hear this. I don't know if he knows what podcasts are, so I feel safe.
Good. Perfect. Well, I have to say that is not where I thought that was going to go, but I don't like to rank our guests, but it's got to be one of the best opening stories we've ever had.
I mean, I think it's a great story. Carrie does not like it when I tell that story. I think it makes her nervous, but I think it's one of the best teenage arrest stories ever.
Yeah, usually Pam prides herself on opening up with the best stories. So I'm going to say you win.
Yeah, you win. Hey,
there we go. That's one thing I've won.
Yay. Congratulations. So,
yeah.
Wow. So Carrie listens.
She's going to be pissed. She's going to be pissed.
She's going to love it.
Or she's going to come on and have her own rebuttal show. So,
She could have a rebuttal. Yeah. Here's the thing, Carrie's mom was a single mom raising two girls, and her mom was very strict because she had to be. And I just had these crazy parents who were journalists who were sort of like, they weren't loosey goosey. I mean, we had to follow rules, but it was just a little bit. I mean, I didn't realize this, but I once asked Carrie, and she's like, oh, yeah, your parents were weird. I mean, they just were a little bit more, you know, it was harder on Carrie's mom. She ran a tighter ship. And I think it was like a little bit, So for Carrie, it was like she got in a lot of trouble. But then I ended up going off to West Virginia for summer camp like a week later after we got arrested. And I didn't have to live with under the wrath of my dad's anger about it. I just went off to summer camp and canoed and like, you know, the Greenbrier River and shot archery and like, you know, that's saying like, you know, like kumbaya and stuff in the camp.
Were you known as the felon of the camp, or how did that work?
Well, there were some jokes made. There were some jokes made. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
Because my pending court case was when I got back, my pending court case, a couple of them knew.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Anyhow, that was in my youth, girls. I grew up.
Thank goodness, because...
You could write a book about the summer of fun.
The summer of 85.
Yeah.
I mean, actually, I will say that actually when I think about it, the summer of 85, that year at camp, I did extremely well. I was the top canoer. I was the top when I got canoeing, and when I get the swimming award too, and I was an honor girl.
What's an honor girl?
No. So an honor girl is someone who embodies the spirit of Camp Allegheny. And and I guess I embody the spirit of Camp Allegheny. So I was an honor girl.
So you're telling me Camp Allegheny was a place for troubled youth?
No, it was not. Actually, it was, I think it was sort of a mixed group of girls. It wasn't like a super posh camp. We lived in tents and stuff. We didn't have electricity and all that stuff. I loved it. I can't say enough about how much it was great. I mean, I went for 7 weeks every summer, and it was right on the Greenbrier River in Lewisburg, West Virginia, and we had, you know, swimming, canoeing, archery, rifle, tennis. You could do horseback riding for extra, which I didn't do. I didn't do that. You could play kickball to your heart's content. It was great. S'mores, hamburgers in the fire. It was great. I loved it. All girls, but It was great.
Okay, so that summer that you were at camp, did you tell the stories of what you learned in the notebook?
You know, I probably shared that, but I mean, I was sort of a late bloomer. I was 15, and there were plenty of girls I went to camp with who knew, who had seen an eruption. And they knew what that was. I had not, except for the photo. And then sometimes we'd have these dances with Camp Greenbrier, which was the boys' camp. Now, they'd come over once a term. So I went for two terms at Camp Allegheny for girls, and every term they would have the boys from Camp Greenbrier. We had a whole song for them. They would come over for a dance, and I was never like brave enough to actually talk to them, because that would be like way too much. But some of the girls, like, they would get caught in the bushes making out with Camp Greenbrier boys.
I thought that's why you went to camp, so I'm glad you cleared it up for me.
No, I was way too shy with the boys. Way too shy. I kicked myself. I should have been way more. I mean, I was like a D cup in like seventh grade, so I should have been getting way more action.
Well, you made your choices. You made a lot of choices.
I did. Instead, I chose a life of felonies.
A life of crime versus a...
life of crime. Instead of life being... of get in action with Camp Greenbrier boys.
Yep.
You blew it. You know what? But she was preparing to be a journalist. Because to be a good journalist, you have to have a lot of life experience.
That's right.
That's true.
That's right.
Very true. All right, we have to take a quick break, and then we'll be right back.
Okay.
We are back. We have a very fun guest today on our show for Cinco de Mayo. She is called in from a bar, which is exactly how Jeanette and I always dreamed this would be recorded. So, do we have background noise? We sure do. Do we care? Not really, because it's fun. So, our guest, Sabra, just told us one of the funniest stories, really, that I've heard at the beginning of our podcast. And as Jeanette pointed out, I do pride myself on my stories, but that one takes the cake. Anyway, we're going to move on from her life as a felon to her adult life and learn why this episode is called She's Been Around. I've been around, specifically. All right. So you left for you finished girls' school and girls' camp and went off to college, had a ball, and realized you were going to for sure be a journalist and you were ready to travel. So what did you do next?
Well, it didn't come quite that quickly. I mean, I graduated from college and thought like I wanted to do something different. So I moved out west to be a ski bum for 2 years in Jackson Hole. And then I decided that I would join the Peace Corps because that seemed like a cool way to like see the world. So I joined the Peace Corps and they sent me to Ukraine. And I was in Ukraine for 2 years. And and then when I finished that, I was like, well, wait a minute. Basically, all I want to do is like see the world and on someone else's dime and get paid to do that. Like, how do I do that? I was like, oh yeah, I can write okay. How do I make that work? Maybe I'll be a foreign correspondent. So because my parents are journalists, I was like, well, why don't I just do that? And I had watched my dad was a national correspondent and I watched his career be kind of exciting. I was like, well, why don't I do that? But like internationally. So I finished a Peace Corps and I started in journalism at a little tiny paper in Laconia, New Hampshire called the Laconia Citizen. It was circulation 15,000. It was an afternoon newspaper. And sort of started trying to make that dream happen. Went to graduate school at Northwestern, got my master's in journalism. and worked for the AP for a while. But my goal was to get overseas. I didn't have any like noble dreams of being a journalist who undiscovers or uncovers, the corruption in city council. I was like, yeah, whatever that. That's a great, journalistic endeavor. However, all I want to do is like travel the world and someone else pay for it. And I'll just tell you what it's like in stories. So the goal was just to work my way into that situation. And at some point I took a job in Moscow with the Moscow Times, which is an English language newspaper in Moscow, Russia. I got over there. They paid for me to get over there. The pay wasn't very much. I got fired within 3 months. I guess I wasn't very good. I mean, I don't know. I got fired. Anyhow, it didn't matter. I decided to stay, and then I ended up like freelancing and sort of living on a shoestring in Moscow. So at that point, I spoke Russian because I'd been in the Peace Corps in Ukraine, where I learned Russian and some Ukrainian, but mostly Russian. And I stayed there freelance, and then I finally got picked up by someone and stayed for 4 years total. The journalism industry sort of was collapsing, imploding on itself, and people were closing foreign bureaus, and I came back home for a little bit. And then, girls, this is when I start moving around. I don't know how soon do you want me to dive into this globe trotting?
Now.
That wasn't moving around. Like, there's, okay, go.
That's what I said. Exactly. What do you mean, when are you going to tell us when you started moving around? You've already gone from the East Coast to basically the Midwest / West Coast to across the world, basically. So when did you start moving around?
It's like out of the vagina, really, I guess. after I left Moscow, and I just knew, like, all I wanted to do was live overseas. I didn't care where it was. I'd go anywhere I thought I could. I was just up for the adventure of it. I mean, I just kind of saw it as this great adventure. And I just kept putting off, or I just thought, like, at some point I'll get married and have kids and settle down or something. But it just didn't seem like it was something I had to do right away. I just felt like I had the whole world in front of me. So I left Moscow. I was in Moscow, and I was working for the Cox newspapers, which it was the parent company of the Atlanta Journal Constitution. They also owned about 17 other mid-sized American city newspapers around the country. Dayton, Ohio, the Austin American Statesman here in Texas, and they were facing troubles like any newspaper was at that time. And they had foreign bureaus. They started closing them, and I came home. But I will say that when I was there, and I could say I work for Cox, that was sort of a, fun thing I like to say. I came home and I got a job, believe it or not, in Alaska, because, you can, I don't know if you guys remember this, but Sarah Palin did tell us that you could see Russia from Alaska. So turns out that's true. I got a job with the Anchorage Daily News, which was a newspaper back then. Now it's a website. And I was their Juneau reporter. I covered the state government there. Sarah Palin was governor at the time. She was brand new. And that was like a great, it was a great civics lesson, to be honest. I mean, I learned how a state government works. That all that stuff you learn in eighth grade in your civics class that I had forgotten. And Sarah Palin was this governor that was getting a lot of national attention. It was fun. She was kind of interesting and fun to cover. However, I was a prima donna, and I thought I was way better than this provincial newspaper I was working for. And I'd been a big, important foreign correspondent. I had covered a revolution and covered, a big terrorist attack in Russia and all this stuff. I thought I was a lot more important than I was. And I did not get along with the editor there. Who thought I was a prima donna. I thought it was provincial. And also fell in love with someone who did not fall in love with me. and had left in a sort of a you can't fire me, I quit scenario with a broken heart, and packed up my Volkswagen Bug, put it on a ferry, and got the fuck out of Alaska, and drove it back into the lower 48. Spent some time in Wyoming working for a couple of startup small publications back in Jackson. I went back to Jackson Hole. I had a lot of girlfriends there who had married ski bums and tried to convert them and marry them and settle them down. That doesn't work. Let me just tell you right now, ski bums, they're really cute, but they don't want to settle down. Don't marry them, girls. Sleep with them and then move on.
Wait. You're not going to breeze over that one. Sorry.
I just, like, a lot of my girlfriends married, like, the ski bums that they were dating, and a lot of them don't turn out to be great partners because they're Peter Pans. They want to have fun and not settle down and raise kids and have steady incomes. That doesn't work. But a lot of my girlfriends stayed in Jackson. So I had this great connection. A lot of female friendships still there. And I, a lot of times ended up back in my life, I've ended up back in Jackson. And so I went back there with this broken heart from Alaska and no job. And I ended up working at, like I said, a couple of startups in Jackson and hanging out with my girlfriends, and then I applied for a job to teach journalism in India, because that's a natural thing to do, right? Jackson, yeah. India. I just wanted to go overseas. I wanted to live overseas. I wanted to see the world. Like, I felt like this is a whole world, and I just wanted to be wherever I had that opportunity. Someone was going to pay me to live there. So I got this job to teach at a graduate journalism school in India, and went over there for a year.
Wait, can I ask you a quick question? And then don't worry. I can see Jeanette's little eyes glisten. Like, she's so excited. But what year is this now? Like, how many years did this all happen in?
Oh, now we're in, like, that was... when did I turn 40? 2000? Wait, hold on. When was I born? 1970. So I turned 40 in 2010? Yeah, 2010. I turned 40 in 2010. So 2009, 2010, I was in India.
Okay.
My broken heart was pretty much mended after like 3 years of him basically like... I mean, it was a lot of me, but it was also him, like, sort of like, you know, being like, oh, I kind of like this whole thing that, like, she gets tortured when I call her. So by that time I turned 40, and I think I was like doing it with some Indian dude who was really cute, but not very smart, but he was really cute. And so in India, was it fascinating? It's a fascinating country. I lived there for a year, and after that I got a job. I got a job offer in Afghanistan, and that's what you do because you go to Afghanistan. And that was to teach at the American University in Afghanistan, which was really cool. I enjoyed that a lot. That campus was really, it was a progressive student body. They were sort of the future of that country, which is an absolutely beautiful country full of, like, incredibly, Afghans are very, very, like, handsome people. I don't know, the men and women, like, their faces are striking. The country geographically is striking. They have an incredible sense of humor, a self-deprecating sense of humor, which I find very entertaining and relatable. And I taught at the American University there for about 2 years. I did some stuff. I got freelance on the side. I was teaching journalism there. And I did some stuff on the side for some United States Agency for International Development, USAID. I did some communication stuff for them. You write reports for them. I pay good money and all that sort of stuff. And did some freelance stuff when I was there for journalism. Wrote some articles for The Guardian and a couple other publications, and was teaching young Afghans how to be journalists. And it was really rewarding. But it was also insecure in terms of the security there. There were frequently, about once a month, we'd have a terrorist attack. You know, an insurgent group would attack a compound, usually of foreign workers or a foreign entity, and it was unstable and scary. And after almost 3 years, just under 3 years, I decided, so in late 2013, I decided that it was time to go. I just felt like my number was going to come up at some point in Afghanistan. I made a buttload of money because they paid me well, and I saved it. There was nothing to, I mean, what do you spend money on, right? Like, there's nothing to spend money on. So I saved a bunch of money, and I used it to travel, and I left Afghanistan, and I flew to Dubai, which was like sort of the direct flight out of Kabul, and parked my, like, I had like I had four or five suitcases, parked them in some sort of like baggage storage and started traveling. I went to Nepal for a little bit. I went to Rwanda for a little bit, visited the gorillas, which is a absolutely bucket list thing to do. And then on my way home from Afghanistan, I shipped a bunch of bags home to Virginia, and I was just going to go home and like dump myself on my dad's front door in New York, much to his dismay. He doesn't like it when I do this, but I do it. I went to Ukraine to visit some Ukrainian friends that I had from the Peace Corps. And I got there, and it was December 2013, and the beginning of it. And a street revolution had just started there in Kyiv, the capital. And it ended up overthrowing a Moscow-friendly government, a corrupt leader that they had in place who had been sort of supported by the Kremlin to be put there and wanted friendlier ties. With Russia, and the country wanted friendlier ties with the European Union and to eventually join it. But mostly it was the corruption. Anyhow, a street revolution overthrew them, and that ended up, I stayed because I started pitching stories, and I was writing for the LA Times and the Christian Science Monitor, if you guys know that publication, and Al Jazeera, if you know them, and did a couple of stints on NPR. Every once in a while, they'd call me. And I stayed, and then the Russians annexed Crimea. I stayed, and then they started a war in the east of Ukraine, and I stayed. And after about 4 years of that, the LA Times, who I've been writing for a lot, said, you know, we want to put you in Moscow permanently as our Moscow correspondent. What do you think? And I thought, well, I'm a little bit kind of sick of this story, but I really want to work for you. So I'll go. You're going to hear some sirens. Sorry. That's not me. They're not coming for me.
Yeah, right. Do you believe that, Jeanette? Because I don't.
So that was in 2017. The LA Times put me in Moscow, and I was their Moscow correspondent, and covered all kinds of stuff. That was 4 years after I've been in Ukraine for 4 years, and that was like I had a really good run. I stayed in Moscow for 3 years, and then in this January of last year, in 2020, the LA Times decided that they could no longer afford to have someone in Moscow, that they wanted to put their resources in the Pacific Rim and Latin America. And that, I don't, you know, geography doesn't really, it does include Russia, but you know, this guy who decided that did not really understand the map. So he decided that he was going to close my Moscow bureau. That was me. And so, you know, dosvidaniya, and I came home.
Yay.
Yeah, so I came home, yeah, on March 15th, which was a great time to come home because that's basically when the pandemic started. And I got offered a job in Texas, and here I am.
All right, well.
You're all your listeners are asleep right now.
No. Russia, Ukraine, Dubai, Texas. I mean, you know, what a great end.
That's a perfect stop for her. She needed a little pause.
Yeah. I mean, well, Texas is a little bit like a foreign country. It is.
Well, they think they are their own country, so.
That's true. I've written some stories about the guy who, every once in a while they submit these bills, right? About separatism and about, you know, I've written a couple of those stories. Yeah. They do think they're their own country. They're not, but they think they are.
Well, you're part of it now. So
I am. I got a driver's license and I mean, I'm a Texan.
Yep. Full on Texan. So Jeanette,
that's right.
I know you have questions.
So because we haven't met before, and this is our first time talking. So, not married, no kids.
Hell no. Thank the Lord. Praise the Lord, as we say down here in the Bible Belt.
Okay. So you feel like you dodged that bullet?
I do. You know, I think I always thought that like that was just like a natural thing. I mean, that's what people do. They get married and have babies. And I think for a long time, I thought that's what I would do just because you do that. But then I just knew like I had this girlfriend once tell me, she said, you know, Sarah, you might have a boyfriend sometime if you were ever willing to be flexible with your with your schedule. And I was like, yeah, I'm not. I mean, I just saw and I still see the world as like, it's just like an adventure. The whole thing's a fucking adventure. And I've had boyfriends and I've had great loves, most of them that broke my heart, but they were kind of to me that, I don't know. Maybe if it had gone differently, maybe I would have married and had kids and settled down if the right scenario came about. But I think all of the relationships that I was in or were wanted to be in, mostly wanted, was rejected. I think they dragged me down and they kept me from, they wouldn't, I mean, I just, I kind of, I didn't want anyone hold me back. I mean, really, I feel that way still a little bit. It would, you know, I don't know, like it could go either way. If some dude said to me like, hey, you know, we're dating and I just got a job in Tokyo, I gotta move there, do you want to come? I'd be like, oh yeah, hell yeah, I do. I mean, I would do that. And I would just make, I could, at this point in my career, I could make it work. I could freelance, I could do something, as long as he didn't want my, have to like, you know, depend on my income. I could be a kept woman in Tokyo. I could do that. But I didn't want to be tied down. It was too hard. It was.
Do you have of all the places that you've lived, do you have a favorite? Is there one that you wish you could go back and experience for a little longer?
You know, I have always dreamed about living in London. I would love to live in London permanently. I mean, I'd love to have a house in London. And I've spent time there. I did a brief sort of internship. I didn't spend too much, you know, I've never lived there for long term. But that has always been a dream of mine, to live in London and sort of, you know, I mean, I'm sort of like in a generation of journalists that like to be a London correspondent was sort of the last step in your foreign correspondent career. And that was sort of like, that was when you made it. But I just, I despite the fact that I lived in all these kind of crazy places and, you know, like South Asia and the former Soviet Union and a little bit in Africa, I mean, I still feel a little bit of a, affinity. I'm an Anglophile, I guess, and I think England is really, I'm sort of, I I sort of feel a little bit connected to it. I'd love to live in London. Yeah. It's sort of the one place that I haven't been able to live there in a long-term thing. And that'd be kind of my dream, I guess. Doesn't that sound beautiful? Of all the places I've lived, I'm like, England, where they speak my language.
No, you're going back to your, from where your family hailed.
It's true. I'm sure there's a castle somewhere that my family, I'd say that to my dad. I'm like, do you think there's like a castle or something? And he's like, don't fucking count on it, kid.
Oh my God. First of all, I love that you pointed out all the dirty words you used, or, you know, what might be considered dirty. I like how you went back and repeated them so that people would know that you were using them.
Am I not allowed to use those words?
Oh, no. You can use whatever you like. We just have to mark it explicit, which is fine because we use all those words.
Okay.
You even used Jeanette's favorite word, which was rim, but you used it geographically.
Oh, right.
That was impressive. So what about, so you have friends everywhere.
I do, yeah. I think I've been pretty good at I've been pretty good at my life because because I went to boarding school, because I went to summer camp. I think it was always very, and then I, you know, had this life overseas. I mean, I spent most like 15 years overseas, or more. Gosh, I've always been good about keeping friendships. I mean, Carrie and I are still good friends. I'm going to see her next week. We've always been in good touch. And I put effort into that. I've always tried to make time to work on those relationships. It's just too bad I never could keep relationships with men, but friendships to me have always been important, and I have made time when I've been overseas to come home and make sure those relationships, I pay attention to those, you know, friendships and those relationships. Those are important to me because they have been the foundation of kind of who I am.
That, and this podcast is about relationships, so beautifully put. Thank you.
Yeah, wasn't very good at the boy stuff.
Well, maybe it was all practice for something better.
Okay. Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
I mean, you're still young. I mean, there's plenty of life to live still.
Exactly.
Yeah. I might be young, but I don't want to date some old dude my age. Because, I mean, who wants to date a 50-year-old? That's gross. I'm not into the old dudes.
Right. Well,
I mean, not to preclude. I mean, if you're an older guy out there, handsome, I'm in. But like, I don't know. Like, I mean, I am kind of an old lady. I like to go to bed early and all that sort of stuff. But like, I don't know. I'm very rarely attracted to men my own age.
But there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, maybe. Anyhow. But actually, you know, I also feel like I'm pretty happy being single. I don't mind. I'm not one. I'm pretty happy being single. I feel very lucky. Earlier you asked, you know, if I dodged a bullet. I mean, I see like, you know, Pam, you and Montana's relationship is so nice and Montana is so cool. And that seems like I could have done that, you know, but I also see like a lot of my friends who have kids. And I'm like, that seems really fucking horrible. I don't think I would have been a great parent. And just because I'm so selfish and I wanted to, it would have been so hard to have a kid and be like, okay, look, kid, we're going to Liberia for 5 months. Suck it up. I mean, Liberia is a shithole and not a very like healthy country to live. And I lived there for almost 6 months and it wouldn't have been okay to have a kid there. And how do you, I don't know. But I sort of, it's a different path, you know, because Pam, like when I see like you in Montana, I think like, well, that would be cool to have a kid that you was like your friend, you know, that was an adult now.
Jeanette's got three of them.
Oh.
Yeah. Not three Montanas. Two Montanas and a boy. Which Montana could be a boy. I mean, who knows? I mean, the name.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Listen to that.
But having like a cool older kid would be fine. But it's the little toddlers. I was just never interested in little kids, ever.
Well, they start out like that, so you got to do something with it.
That's the thing. I mean, like out of the vagina gate, they were kind of like that.
Exactly. You can't hand them off. I love this. True. I love the music you've brought to the podcast.
I'm sorry, this is at the bar. Can you hear it? It's outside. Is it too loud?
Sometimes we can hear it, but that's all. I mean, it's a very unique episode, is it not, Jeanette?
Well, I think so much of what we've done has been during COVID. So this is like all foreign to me. Like, I'm like, oh, this is like the before days.
I didn't hear.
I lost her a little bit.
She couldn't hear you. I'll have to repeat, Jeanette.
Go ahead. I just was saying that, you know, that this is like, you know, we started this during COVID. So listening to all the bar noises, I'm like, oh, this is like the before days. I don't know what being in a bar is like anymore.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing about Texas. We've been really lucky is we have so I'm outdoors right now. I mean, I'm in my bar, but it's like I'm outside. So we've been really lucky that like we've been able to do this for most of the year.
True. We have our own rules, that's for sure.
Yeah. They're kind of loosey-goosey rules.
They are a little loosey-goosey.
I've been outside most of the time.
I know. She lived alone like a, she lived alone like, I don't know. Kind of like we did, only alone. A lot of the year in her new house, in her new state. So that's crazy. But definitely very interesting woman. Thank you so much. Jeanette, do you have any questions for her?
I don't. Thank you so much for taking time out of your Cinco de Mayo.
Agreed.
I mean, I kind of had nothing else to do, ladies, to be honest. But, no, I mean, I hope I didn't babble. I'm sorry. I might be the most babbling guest you've had.
You told a very interesting story. Sorry, Jeanette. Go ahead.
I said very interesting. Yeah.
Agreed.
Anytime. I mean, next time you call, I'll just make some stuff up if you want.
I mean, that first story, I'm going to pretend you made it up anyway, so my story can be better.
Carrie is going to be so mad. But she hates it. Like, I tried to tell it at, like, her 40th birthday, and she was like, shut up.
No. Well, Carrie.
It's so funny. We were so shocked. I mean, to this day, I like to tease Carrie and be like, I know you still have the photo. I know you still have the photo. Because I think we gave the diary back, but I don't know what happened to the photo. I don't know what happened.
The librarian has it.
The librarian. It's probably we left it in the Xerox machine.
Well, yeah, three drunk girls left it on a Xerox machine in the public library.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, it's such a good story. It's such a good arrest story. Anyhow. But now our Carrie is a respectable member of the community with two stepchildren and a respectable wife who I like very much. And I think she probably would not like this to get out, but it is such a funny story, man. And it shows creativity in our criminality. It shows creativity.
I agree with you. And also it was many moons ago and we didn't mention her last name.
That's true. So her business won't be affected.
No, not at all. All right. Well, thank you so much for being our guest. We appreciate it.
Thank you for wanting to talk to me. I mean, I think I'm like not a very interesting person, so thank you so much.
Well, we'll see. We'll let the listeners judge. We'll see how many people listen to the episode or turn it off halfway through.
Yeah, or give it like a one star. Be like most boring person ever.
I would love it. Just maybe, okay. Maybe Carrie will rank it. Anyway.
Carrie will rank it as a negative. Be like, shut her up.
Oh, my God.
All right, girls. Thanks so much. It was nice speaking with you. Good luck, and I'll be tuning in.
Thank you. All right.
Okay.
Bye.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Thank you all for listening. Listen on Apple, Anchor, Breaker, Google Podcasts, Overcast, Pocket Cast, Radio Public, and Spotify. As always, check out our website. Our drink recipe isn't going to be too confusing as it is a margarita. Check us out on Instagram and Facebook. Too Real to Be True. Happy 5th of July. I'm just kidding. 5th of May. All right. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Too Real to Be True. Unless otherwise indicated, all the names, characters, businesses, places, events, and incidents in this podcast are either a product of the podcaster's imaginations or used in a fictitious manner. Any resemblance to actual persons, living or dead, or actual events is purely coincidental. Our opinions are our own. Any opinions shared by our guests are their own.